This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Last night, President Barack Obama stepped out into the University of Arizona's McHale Memorial Center. More than 10,000 people stood before him, with thousands more watching via simulcast nearby. Obama was there to address the tragic events that took place in Saturday in Tucson. And part of what he was there to address was civil discourse and the modern media.
If this tragedy prompts reflection and debate, as it should, let's make sure it's worthy of those we have lost. Let's make sure it's not on the usual plane of politics and point scoring and pettiness that drifts away in the next news cycle.
President Obama said clearly that a lack of civil discourse was not the cause that led to the deaths of six people in Arizona and that also left Representative Gabrielle Giffords critically injured with a gunshot wound to her head. Shortly after the events in Tucson were broadcast on television and radios across the country, those radios and televisions began talking instead about rhetoric. We've now hit the extra spin setting on the news cycle washing machine, the after analysis, the fight about the fight, the heated debate over the heated debate in this country. Oh, news media, how so very postmodern of you. Well, here on Radio Boston, when we look for answers about the media, we turn to our friend, Boston University Professor John Carroll, who also blogs at thecampaignoutsider.com. Hi there, John.
Hi, Meghna.
So, John, it's no longer a question that as a country we digest events, major events as the Tucson shooting, through the media. That's where our national discourse happens. And, you know, I'm including us here when it comes to the media. We've been running on eight cylinders on this story for the past week. And before we get too far, I just want to recap that early on, the debate in the media became a little less about, well, or maybe a lot less about the events that actually happened in Tucson and instead about political rhetoric preceding the events. And there's no better showcase for political rhetoric than in the media. So you've been watching all of this, and I guess that's my long-winded way of saying what's your take?
Well, you know, one great American tradition is the assigning of blame. So very often the media turns to the assigning of blame immediately so that they have something that's juicy. They also want a narrative. And the narrative they decided on, a lot of them decided on, was that this was the shooting in Tucson was a reflection of the sort of vitriolic political discourse that's going on now. And people with an agenda started jumping on particular things that have been going on. I mean, they saw hot buttons like Sarah Palin, who had the map with the crosshairs on it. They saw the Tea Party. One Democratic operative said, we have to move quickly to pin this on the Tea Party. Mm-hmm. And there were obviously motives that were political in nature that led to the kind of talk that followed immediately in the wake of the shooting.
So you said the media went looking for that straight line narrative, but you there's no straight line.
We haven't seen a straight line yet. I mean, we have not seen a straight line between Jared Lee Loeffner and the Tea Party or Sarah Palin or political discourse of any kind. What we've had is a lot of people sort of trying to make something coherent out of something that is really not coherent at all. There's no rationality behind what he did.
Well, whether or not there's rationality, and you can make an argument that rationality is not often present in how the modern media operates, it's this question about civil discourse that really did become sort of the weighty story that had legs, you know, as we say. So let's get a little taste about the rhetoric over the rhetoric or the fight about civil discourse that we're talking about here. First, let's listen to a little bit of Keith Olbermann and his stentorian tones on MSNBC.
At a time of such urgency and impact, we as Americans, conservative or liberal, should pour our hearts and souls into our politics. We should not, none of us, not Gabby Giffords, not any conservative, ever have to pour our blood. And every politician and commentator who hints otherwise, or worse still, stays silent now, should have no place in our political system and should be denied that place, not by violence, but by being shunned and ignored.
A few channels over, there was the pregnant pauses of Glenn Beck.
For instance, you want to shut everybody down. It's all you do is you say they're dangerous. It's hate speech, you know. Nothing but violent rhetoric. They've been using this storyline for a very, very long time. It's almost laughable at this point. They've been wrong so many times. They're desperately using every opportunity to try to convince you that somehow or another Sarah Palin is dangerous. Somehow or another Rush Limbaugh is dangerous than I am.
So, John, Fox News and MSNBC, 'twas ever thus?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Glenn Beck thinks that not only are they not dangerous, but they're in danger, because he sent an email to Sarah Palin this week saying, get some protection for yourself and your family, because an attempt on you could bring the republic down. So that's an indication of sort of the heightened level of hyperbole that's going on right now. What we're seeing is a lot of hyperbole, a lot fewer specifics. So there's this sense of MSNBC attacking Fox. There's this sense of Fox inciting people to violence. But there's very few really concrete examples of what's going on, at least that I've seen.
Well, very few concrete examples. When you say what's going on, you mean like the actual facts of what happened in Tucson?
Of the accusations. You see clips on MSNBC of things that the way they hold them up to the light, these are violent, these are clips that are trying to incite violence and action from people who are like-minded. If you hold it up to the light a different way, it looks fairly harmless. It looks like typical political or media conversation. So I think that people are trying to make some things out of what's going on in the media that might not actually be there.
Well, maybe it was a little slip of the tongue there when you said political, but you meant media. Oftentimes, like, the two might be a little hard to tell apart. I mean, is this actually a political conversation that's going on under the guise of media navel-gazing?
It's a political conversation from the standpoint of there's very few dispassionate voices out there. There are very few people out there who don't have some kind of ideological agenda. And what we're seeing, especially on cable news, is that you need to stake a position. You need to take a position somewhere on the political spectrum to give you an identity, to give you sort of a base, the same way a politician does. So a politician has certain positions they take, and that will give them some kind of base of constituents. The cable networks are doing the same way. And even CNN, which held out as long as it could, now is looking to do basically the same thing. So, media, politics, it's all sort of put in the Cuisinart now and hit puree. And what you've got is what we've been seeing for the last week.
Well, maybe that puree comes to an even finer point on the web, where it's not just, sound bites and chunks, but links, which are really the cachet that gets people's attention. I know you've written about that as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's a sort of linkmanship going on, and part of it is the nature of the media now, which is who's got the hottest story? Who's got the hottest link out there? The other part is these sort of arguments that turn into this perpetual motion machine of links that feed off each other, and all of a sudden what you have is this exponential growth of a conversation that is sort of self-contained after a while. It becomes its own sort of piece of the media world, and it starts getting further and further away from the reality of what's going on out there. It starts to become about itself in a lot of ways.
That made me wonder. I mean, I was speaking with Dan Mazzi, our producer today. Like, where is it maybe on the web where there's room for sort of original thinking and analysis? I mean, I guess some of it's coming from the bloggers, but once it sort of immediately gets telescoped into the linkmanship that you're talking about, that's the end of the analysis, or is it?
Well, it depends. I mean, there's a lot of good work out there. There's a lot of responsible people out there. I don't want to give the wrong impression here. There are a lot of responsible people out there who are trying to look at this and to come to some kind of conclusion and to help people understand what's going on, to develop some kind of perspective on what's going on. It's not that it's not there. One of the problems, I think, is that there's so much there that it's very hard to find the center of this story. There's so much there that you get a lot more activity, you get a lot more volume, but a lot of times you get a lot less impact because of how much is out there.
But on the other hand, maybe centers do emerge because I'm wondering, I think that one of the things that got a lot of attention on the web and therefore reflected back to the broadcast media and print media was that the infamous crosshairs map from Sarah Palin, and she was quite quiet about it for several days, except just yesterday, Sarah Palin made a statement comparing the idea that her style of politicking, that Crosshairs map, which was kept alive, actually, by all those links on the web.
Absolutely.
She said in a video statement that had somehow, the criticism of that had somehow contributed, let me rephrase here and get this right. Sarah Palin said that the idea that her style of politicking had somehow contributed to Saturday's shooting, and the idea that was true was akin to what she called a blood libel. Let's listen to her.
Especially within hours of a tragedy unfolding. Journalists and pundits should not manufacture a blood libel that serves only to incite the very hatred and violence that they purport to condemn. That is reprehensible.
So, I mean, that's another chapter, in the use of language in the media talking to itself here over the phrase of the blood libel and its religious origins.
Yeah, and I think that it's a very charged phrase, and I think that the debate has come down to, is Sarah Palin clueless or shameless in using this phrase? And I think you can find people on both sides of that. But I think what it's done is illustrated in many ways the contrast between Barack Obama's speech and Sarah Palin's speech. And I think one of the things you're seeing in the media now as part of the conversation is this sort of conventional wisdom that's starting to come together that Barack Obama made the most of his opportunity. Sarah Palin made the least of her opportunity and really squandered an opportunity to look bigger than sort of her agendas. She went out there and seemed to be trying to defend herself, which she has every right to do, but to mix that in with the address and her sort of reaction to the shootings themselves and the victims, I mean, that struck some people as sort of tin-eared, whereas Obama's speech struck a lot of people across the political spectrum as really pitch perfect and right on target and really sort of big-hearted. Mm-hmm. And the contrast between his speech and her speech is becoming one of the sort of tropes that's going on out there now.
It seems to be almost sort of an easy trope to set the two of them up against each other, but that is what's happening because on MSNBC yesterday, conservative pundit and former presidential candidate Pat Buchanan got in a pretty heated debate with the Democratic strategist Robert Schrum about exactly what Sarah Palin had said. So let's listen to this.
I think it is amazing that Sarah Palin goes out there and suggests, for example, that the people who disagree with her are evil.
Mm-hmm. I don't think she suggested the people disagree with her are evil.
Oh, Pat, she did. Read the statement. Read the statement. Those who embrace evil and parade it as good.
Let me say this about Sarah Palin.
Read the statement.
She is not a dispenser of hate, Mr. Schrum. She is a victim
of hate. I didn't say she was.
She just suggested
that the people who disagree with her are evil. Now, we're vigorously debating, Pat, but I'm not saying you're evil.
Thank you very much. What I'm saying is,
this
woman is not a dispenser of hate.
Me.
She's a victim of hate. And I think there's an awful lot of people.
Come on, she's no victim.
In the last several days.
She's no victim.
What?
She's been out there taunting people for 2 years.
Oh, just makes your eyes go wide listening to it, watching it. I'll admit it made for great television, but what does it say that, in the past few days when we've been talking about having civil discourse, that this is the nature of discourse on television?
It's always the nature of discourse on television. It's just a different topic that comes along. I mean, the news media is this self-cleaning oven that basically runs the same way almost all the time. What it does is it changes the recipe a little bit. So, you're doing cupcakes today, you're doing cakes tomorrow, you're doing pies the next day. But basically what they do is they operate in the same way, which is to provide good entertainment. And if the topic is one that's highly charged, they have to be a little more circumspect. But basically, this is theater. I mean, that's what they're staging now. And I think that sort of overwhelms the topics a lot of times, and it becomes more about sort of providing an entertaining package than actually providing something that's reasonable and substantial.
John, you said that this has become a trope of broadcast media, and I think people would agree that it's been going on for so long, you almost hardly even notice. So I'm going to borrow a phrase from your blog and say, here, we at Radio Boston, we dialed the Wayback Machine. And we actually reached back a couple years for a piece of tape from another media personality who made a stand when it comes to critiquing the media. Let's listen to that.
I made a special effort to come on the show today because I have privately amongst my friends and also in occasional newspapers and television shows mentioned this show as being bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to, I felt that that wasn't fair, and I should come here and tell you that I don't, it's not so much that it's bad as it's hurting America. So I wanted to
but
come here today
defense, let me,
and say...
Wait.
I just,
let me,
here's just one, what I wanted to tell you guys.
Yeah.
Stop. Stop hurting America.
Okay, now...
And come work.
So, John, that, of course, is Jon Stewart appearing on Crossfire, which used to be on CNN, back in 2004. He says, this kind of conversation is hurting America. Crossfire got canned very soon after that, but that was 6-7 years ago. Do we ever have any hope of this changing?
I hope we have hope of it changing, but I can't say that that I think that it absolutely will. I mean, I think people get the media they deserve, and people get what they are demanding, and what they are demanding right now is the kind of thing that we're seeing on the cable news networks, at least a part of the audience. And so this is a sort of a cooperative effort. This is something that that the audience and the media are doing in concert. So I'm not sure that we should pin all the blame on what people are doing, because this is something that is actually working in the marketplace.
John Carroll, professor of communication at Boston University, and also he blogs at campaignoutsider.com. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Magda.